Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you from the team behind Cycling Plus, MBUK and BikeRadar.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Bike Radar podcast. My name is Simon Bromley, I'm a senior technical writer for BikeRadar.com, and today I am fortunate to be joined by Sam Challis, BikeRadar.com's technical editor, and Stan Portis, BikeRadar.com's digital writer. How are you doing, guys?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, very
nice
good.
Nice to join you chaps today.
Cool. Well, Les, lovely to be here as usual. And today is a road discussion day. So we're going to talk about the new Orbea Orc Aero, which we recently published both a review on BikeRadar.com and on our YouTube channel. And it's a kind of interesting bike with a few kind of quirks and a few interesting features. So we thought it warranted a bit of a more kind of informal, wider discussion. Now, to kick things off, lads, obviously I've ridden this bike, I've reviewed it, and you haven't. But the kind of key talking point I think most people see at first glance is the kind of aero water bottle slash down tube storage box. So, you know, what did you guys think of those things at first glance?
So you want to talk about the aero water bottles first, maybe? Because, or water bottle, isn't it? Just the one. I think it's a really good feature, although BMC's take on it is a little more practical, I think, for normal riders and pros on a number of levels. You're not limited to a certain type of bottle, plus you can fit more bottles on a bike. I guess there's a question of whether Orbea's design is faster, but I'd imagine both brands could prove that their design was faster depending on how exactly they test. But, given the difference is pretty negligible anyway in the real world, probably makes more sense for me to go towards BMC's more practical solution. I don't know what you guys think.
I think one of the most, as soon as you see the bike, it's really striking. It's a really funky, crazy looking bike, and that's mostly to do with the down tube box and the aero water bottle. And I think as soon as we saw the pictures of the bike and we put it on social media and put our first news story up, that was kind of what people immediately reacted to, is like, here's something that looks really different. So I think the first thing that's kind of striking about the bike as a whole is its aesthetic rather than necessarily any performance claims attached to those features. And I think there's potentially a bit of a trade-off in people's minds between, do you want something that looks that funky and it's going to look that wild and draw that people's attention, or do you really want to do you want those features to save those watts?
Yeah, and I think so. For those who don't know, the Orbea Orca Aero is a kind of, you know, brand new aero road bike, and it kind of looks very much like the brand's Ordu time trial / triathlon bike. And so the aero bottle and the down tube storage box are very kind of like triathlon style. And I think for a lot of, you know, traditional roadies, that, as you say, Stan, that aesthetic is not, you know, it's not cool, right? But like for me, I thought the down tube storage box was really good. You know, I always carry a saddlebag because I don't want to carry spare tubes and multi-tools and things like that in my jersey pockets. And so the down tube storage box just kind of negated any need to carry a saddlebag, which was quite nice. You know, Orbea says it also makes the bike a little bit more aero. That's presumably because it acts as a kind of fairing between the front wheel and the kind of rear part of the bike. So I can believe that. So for me, there wasn't any downsides to the storage box. I didn't really mind the way it looked. Now, the water bottle functionally, I don't think is as easy to use as standard water bottles. Now, if you can take it off, it's not, you know, both of these things are not necessary on this bike. You can take both of them off, but the down tube water bottle is more of a kind of time trial focused item, and it's just not as easy to use as standard round bottles. So kind of after one ride, you know, I just ended up taking it off and putting two standard bottles on, because I think, you know, I'm sure you guys have experienced this, but when you're riding in a bunch of other people, you can't really look down to make sure you're getting the water bottle out or putting it back in correctly every time, because that's just dangerous, right? You know, because if someone breaks in front of you or you need to avoid a pothole, if you're looking down even for a kind of split second, it's just not really safe. So for me, that was a bit of a deal breaker, but you know, I like the idea, and I think for people who are doing time trials or, you know, dabbling in triathlons and things like that, you know, maybe it's a bit more appropriate.
Absolutely. I think there's an interesting point around the storage box and the UCI legality of the feature, and how applicable it is to everyday riders. I think, from my opinion, they absolutely shouldn't care less unless they're participating in an activity governed by the UCI. Realistically, how many riders are doing that though? Things like the storage box, and they can be a practical advantage as well as a potential performance advantage by flouting these rules that aren't really applicable. I'd see that as totally worth it for the everyday rider. I'd echo your thoughts, Simon, on what a good concept the storage box is.
Yeah, I think it's funny, isn't it? Because often when you speak to time trialists, one of the things they love to point out about their bikes is the fact that because they don't have to exist within UCI regulations, they're faster and they're better. So, and really, you know, if that's the case, then why should your average cyclist who's not competing and isn't a world tour pro have to be constrained in that way?
Yeah, totally. And I think we see a lot of people love to say that their bike is, you know, maybe lighter than the UCI weight limit. You know, and no one looks at the UCI rulebook when they're setting up their bike for kind of fit reasons, right? Even though there are plenty of rules around, you know, how much reach you can have, how much saddle setback you must have, for example, and no one really takes those into account. But yeah, like you say, I know, like, obviously for bike designers, they have to design a bike that's kind of within UCI rules if they want it to be raced in the World Tour. And so that's fair enough. And there's a reason, therefore, that we don't see it. But obviously, as you say, like, the majority of bikes that they're selling are going to be ridden by people who will never take part in a UCI sanctioned event. So I think it's a nice thing for Orbea to be kind of, you know, providing those extra things and just, you know, sort of saying, oh, forget about the rules. They, you know, they just don't apply.
I mean, it is a nice thing. I personally, given current options, I would still prefer a locker / compartment based storage solution in a down tube, so it's all fully hidden away. That's probably because I care more about how I look than
even if
than
it was slower
performance. Absolutely, as long as it looks good. Simon,
I had a question about the box, which I don't think the review covered, but what's it like inside? Do you just put stuff in? I mean, another question I had about it was, like, if you're cycling along, are things rattling around, or, you know, what's going on?
So on the inside, it's obviously just completely hollow, but because of the way it's shaped, it, you know, kind of, it narrows down into a kind of aerofoil section at the front. It's not as roomy as you might expect, and a lot of it is the kind of mount on the frame. And so there's space in there for, like, an inner tube, a couple of tire levers, a multi-tool, and, you know, some kind of tire or inner tube patches, for example, but you wouldn't be able to fit much else in there. I found that when everything was kind of tightly packed in there, stuff didn't rattle around. So I didn't have any problems with that, because I agree that that would have been a real deal breaker for me if stuff had rattled around. I really don't like noisy bikes, but it just wasn't a problem. It didn't ever fall off. The cover just kind of clips in with pressure, but it didn't ever fall off, and I didn't really have any problems with it. So yeah, as far as I was concerned, you just kind of, it was happy to stay there. I just didn't really have any problems with it at all.
Do you think people that buy one of these bikes will eventually do what you did and just switch the bottle cage out and then eventually take off the fairing box type thing on the bottom?
I don't know. So obviously we get comments from our audience, which we love, and someone commented on my review already, my written review on bikeradar.com, to say that they loved the Aero water bottle, and actually they had a picture of their giant Propel, and they had two Aero water bottles on it inside the frame. Now, that's a really fast solution, and it's quite a nice, because one of the nice things about this water bottle is it's not proprietary to the Orca Aero. It just mounts on standard water bottle cages. Mounts, and so yeah, you could take it and put it on kind of any bike, whether it be a time trial bike, an aero bike, whatever. But I just don't think it's as easy to use, especially if you've kind of got gloves on or anything. The way you grab it is because it's quite thin, for aerodynamics. It's just not as easy to hold. I didn't really get on too well with the way you kind of drink from it. It's just it wasn't as good a water drinking experience as a standard round bottle, and considering that's the kind of primary function of those, is to kind of keep you hydrated easily, it just didn't really hit the mark for me. Whereas I think, as you said earlier, Sam, like the BMC Time Machine has a kind of down tube that's wider and uses bottle cages to manage the airflow around standard water bottles, and that's something else. Like the Trek Madone or the Cannondale System 6 use much wider down tubes to manage the airflow around standard water bottles, and for me that's a kind of better solution, just because you want to be able to use standard water bottles. If you're doing an event or something where you can get a different water bottle in the middle of an event, whether that's a race or a sportif or something like that, if you've got an aero water bottle that you're going to have to constantly fill up every time you get to a feed station or something, well, you're going to lose all of that time that you've saved from having an aero bottle. So for me, it's kind of like, it's not practical, right? It's like running maybe time trial tires for a road race. Like, yeah, sure, they're faster until the point that you puncture, right? And so that, like with road racing bikes, you're never wanting to go for all out speed over everything else, because you need a bit more practicality and reliability than you do with, say, a pure time trial bike or a triathlon bike, where, for a triathlon, if you're doing a short distance triathlon, the bike leg might not be very long, and therefore you 500 mils of water is enough. But for a road race or bunch riding, whatever, if I'm going out for a big day in the saddle, then I'm always taking two water bottles, and especially if I'm riding in a group, as I said earlier, like it needs to be practical to be able to use that in a group. Okay, well, that's enough on that. Let's move on to the kind of the thing that was perhaps most controversial on our YouTube channel, because this kind of topic always is. I kind of stoked the opinions a little bit, because I have, maybe non-traditional opinions on this subject. But let's talk about the kind of weight of the bike, because I was a bit surprised when I reviewed it, because it came in quite a lot over the kind of claimed weight that we had when the bike was launched. We'll discuss kind of why that is. But the total weight for the bike without pedals, but with the kind of aero bottle cage and storage box, was 8.24 kilos. Now, that's for a size 57 with a kind of standard paint job, deep section wheels. So not a kind of small bike, but that when you add pedals and then maybe a bike computer, you're looking at a bike that's over 8.5 kilos on the road. So obviously for a lot of people, for a £10,000 bike, or $10,000 bike, I should say, that's quite a lot. I personally don't think it's a massive deal for aero bikes, but I guess there are probably different opinions out there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you'd have to say, relative to the other bikes in the genre at the moment, like you said in your review, it gives almost a kilo away to the Canyon Aero CFR over half a kilo to plenty of other exceptional competitors. So, like, rightly or wrongly, weight is still a considerable factor for the majority of consumers in their purchase decisions, I think. So there has to be a case to say that concessions need to be made for that, for business sake, as much as anything else.
What do you think, Stan, though? Is this, you know, is, if you're buying a pure aero bike and you've kind of, you know, you've kind of looked at the maths and you think, well, the, you know, the aero maybe outweighs the weight, or is this something that, you know, if you were parting with your money, would you feel hard done by getting a bike that weighs over 8 kilos for that money?
Well, my current bike weighs over 8 kilos. So I think, you know, it wouldn't be...
Did you spend $10,000 on it, though?
No, I spent about a third of that. So, I mean, so I had a lot of leftover money. Well, I didn't have the money. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how bothered I am, to be honest. I think it kind of comes down to who's the intended rider here, who's the intended user. Because if it's borrowing from a TT bike, then... yeah, it makes sense that it's heavier. It's going to be heavier. And but the drill's going, so I'm going to start again.
That's okay.
I think the thing is, who's this bike for? Its design cues are coming from a TT bike. So the fact that it's over 8 kilograms, it's not as heavy as a TT bike, it kind of seems pretty reasonable. And what's the intended use here? Probably racing or going fast in the flat. And if you're interested in doing that, then it being a bit heavier going up and your times being a bit slower going uphill doesn't seem like too much of a loss to me. Because also how much time are you going to be losing? That's the other question.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you kind of go on a, you know, kind of cycling power modeling website, for example, you can put in all these numbers and see what the kind of the differences make. And I think, you know, anytime I've done that, the differences between, you know, even for kind of big weight differences, like a kilo or something, the difference in actual time, even on relatively steep climbs, tend to actually be quite small. And of course, that's with kind of all else being equal as well, which is rarely the case, right? Because yes, you could make this bike lighter by, you know, switching from clincher/tubeless wheels to a set of tubular wheels. But because if you do that, you're losing a little bit in terms of rolling resistance as well, because the best clinchers now tend to be faster than tubulars. And sure, you could take the aero bottle off and use standard bottles as we've already discussed, but again, it probably makes the bike slower. You know, you could use lighter weight components. I'm sure like the kind of heavier aero handlebar could probably be swapped out for something lighter. But like, again, like if it's not as aerodynamic, you know, are you actually making the bike slower? So it's kind of really tricky. And I agree with Sam that like when you're looking at it compared to its competitors, it's a harder thing to ignore, because obviously all else being equal, you might as well have a lighter bike. But, you know, options like the Canyon Aero CFR that Sam mentioned, yes, it's, you know, it's almost a kilo lighter, but I think for me, I'd still, if I was spending my own money, I'd probably still prefer to have the Orbea, just because it maintains that level of kind of front end adjustability that I think is really valuable. Whereas, you know, part of the way the Canyon Aero shaves weight is by using a proprietary integrated handlebar setup, which, you know, obviously if it fits you perfectly, then that's great. But if you want a longer front end, for example, and a narrower bar than is possible with the kind of stock options, you just can't, that's it, you can't have it. So it's a kind of tricky one. I didn't mark it down for it, because it just as you said, Stan, it kind of just seems like this bike is designed as you say, like a bit like a time trial bike, and so you're going to expect a certain amount of extra weight. Now my time trial bike is, you know, I often like to say it's kind of like the heaviest and fastest bike that I own. And I have to keep kind of reminding myself about that, just because, you know, it puts you in the right body position, right? We all know that it's the body that creates the most drag. So I couldn't mark it down in the sense, because I think doing that would have gone against my own principles that weight doesn't really matter that much, you know, because obviously I'm a really lightweight guy. And if weight mattered all that much, I'd be absolutely rapid. and I'm just not. So... yeah, so it's one of those things. But like, but as you said, Sam, like it is clearly still something that our audience really cares about. So it was important for me to kind of, you know, it's one of the easiest things to test, right? When a brand gives us a figure, it's the easiest thing we can test. It's really hard for us to test the aerodynamics of a bike, but we can all get access to a scales. So,
yeah, I think, and in this case as well, it is made worse by the discrepancy between the claimed weight and the weight in reality. I mean, to have that bigger difference is unusual, although it's done by every other brand to varying degrees, isn't it? So it's not like Orbea is acting out of turn here.
No, and I wouldn't say, you know, they weren't lying in a sense either. So the reason for the discrepancy, Orbea said, is because that figure was based on a size 53 centimeter bike with a lighter, like one of their kind of raw carbon clear coat paint jobs, and without the storage box and aero bottle. So, you know, when we weigh other bikes, we would typically weigh them without pedals and without bottle cages. But in this case, since the kind of aero bottle and storage box come with the bike, obviously I weighed the bike with those things. So, you know, maybe that's slightly unfair. But as you say, a kind of 650 gram difference, you know, that's one of the bigger differences I've seen. And I think perhaps Orbea might have been better served to have sort of, you know, not given a best case scenario weight when they were releasing their press materials, just because it sets up a kind of expectation that you're then, you know, you're then going to struggle to meet when you send out bikes to consumers or, you know, testers or whatever. So it's kind of just one of those things. You know, we all know that most people weigh bikes without pedals, which is, you know, a bit silly considering we all need pedals to ride a bike anyway. So when we all see these kind of claimed weight figures anyway, they're always with a pinch of salt, and it's kind of just one of those things. But yeah, there you go.
I mean, it's funny as well, because it's only got, you know, 50 mil deep wheels as well. And the bike that you're riding is, or you test rode, was equipped with Jura Ace. It was all very, very nice. So, I mean, it could end up, for a lot of people, it could end up even heavier, right? Because they might not spec Jura Ace. Well, they probably won't spec Jura Ace. And then because it's an aero bike, they might decide to spec slightly deeper rim widths as well.
Yeah, and that's definitely a consideration, and I would say obviously that applies to bikes of all brands. You know, that was one thing I kind of did say in the review, is that compared to say something like the Cannondale System 6, which I tested earlier this year, which has you know, a kind of 65 millimeter deep wheel set with rims that are around 4 millimeters wider, you know, that was still, you know, around 350 grams lighter than this bike. So yeah, like, If you're comparing like to like, and the, you know, the System 6 and the Orbea Orca Aero sit in a very sort of similar, you know, product category, then it's 350 grams your extra that you're carrying around. Whether those 350 grams really make that much difference in the kind of product category of pure aero road bikes, I'm not really convinced it does. But at the same time, you know, you don't want to have to carry it if you don't have to. So yeah, it definitely, it's kind of food for thought. As I've kind of said many times on bikeradar.com, like, I really don't think the weight is as significant as, you know, a lot of people seem to believe it is. But at the same time, if it's mass that you don't need to carry, then of course it's always better not to. So yeah. Okay. Well, one of the things we did sort of touch on briefly earlier is that kind of adjustability, and I think that's one of the key selling points of this bike, is its customization options. Now, personally, I think this is a super important thing, especially for an aero road bike, where you kind of, as we kind of touched on, optimizing your bike fit is really, really important, because the body accounts for kind of 80% of the total system drag. So Orbea's Myo program, which essentially allows you to go in and customize the spec, and then that includes, you know, handlebar width, stem length, crank length, and then if you want to make component upgrades to, say, you know, change the wheel set or add a power meter or whatever, it's a really cool program. And obviously you can also add a custom paint job for no extra cost, which is, you know, pretty cool. I don't know if either of you guys have ever had a chance to play around with the tool, but, you know, what do you think of those kind of tools, and how useful do you think those are for a consumer?
Yeah, I've had a go with it on a number of occasions, and I just think it's a fantastic option, almost whatever the riding discipline. Like, I covered the the Orbea's new Terra gravel bike launched recently, and Orbea made a point of saying that the bike could be dressed up or down depending on rider needs, and part of that was down to the fairly versatile, sensible bike design. But actually what sets that Terra apart from other gravel bike design is its access to that Myo program. You know, it lets riders tailor the spec choice to their gravel riding needs, and that's pertinent because gravel's so wide ranging, and so off the peg bikes aren't necessarily very likely to suit individual riders perfectly. And I think it makes just as much sense here, if not more sense, when, as you've said, Simon, how aero you are as a rider, bike system comes down so much to how well you fit on the bike. It's totally invaluable, I think, having the option to move the goalposts around before you buy.
Yeah, I agree as well. And I think one of the things that kind of surprises me about the fact that you can buy an off-the-shelf £10,000 bike is the fact that it's coming with a certain set of handlebars and a certain width of handlebar and a certain saddle and a certain set of wheels. And it seems kind of ludicrous to me that if you're going to spend that much money, you're just going to go for, one, something everyone else has, and two, you're not going to be able to specify handlebar width and or saddle choice or wheel choice. So I think, yeah, being able to do that is a huge win, I think. And it's also funny as well, because like with integrated cockpits, I mean, I think when Envy released their road bike, one of the things that they made a big noise about was the fact that there was X number of different variations of stem length and handlebar width. And it's like, well, with this system, you also have choice, but also down the line, if you have this bike for a year or a couple of years, you're not locked in. You're not locked in to having a proprietary handlebar, which just makes so much sense. Why would you not go for that?
Yeah, so and I totally agree with that. And in their press releases, well, it might have been the presentation, but Orbea made a big point to sort of say that they'd sort of done the internal testing, and in their testing, the difference between a fully integrated handlebar and a non-integrated handlebar, when they designed them correctly, you know, it was only 1 or 2 watts at kind of 4 to 5 kilometers per hour. So the gain isn't massive. Now, there might be a kind of associated weight gain because, you know, they're using a kind of aluminium stem and a carbon handlebar, and obviously there's extra parts like bolts and obviously you have to overbuild the stem handlebar interface a little bit to make it, you know, obviously not get crushed. So there might be a weight gain associated with it, but for me, as you kind of say, that adjustability, especially if you're spending that much money, that adjustability is really key. And yeah, like you just said, Stan, I think, you know, many people, if you're spending that much money, like maybe you've had a good bike fit and you know exactly what you want, but also you might not know exactly what you want. And if you're just kind of, you know, maybe you get like a kind of 40 centimeter handlebar now, but then, yeah, 6 months down the line, you know, you read one of my excellent articles on bikeradar.com and you think, oh, you know, maybe I'd like to try a 36 centimeter handlebar, you know, and if, as you say, if you spent all your money on a really expensive integrated handlebar, then that could cost you a lot of money to replace if that option is even available, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, once everyone's heard and read your amazing article, Simon, and everyone's riding around on 26 centimeter handlebars, they're going to be hitting their foreheads wondering, you know, what they're supposed to do with their integrated cockpit.
Yeah well, you know, and I think, you know, it's not an insignificant gain either. Just to sort of put it in some context, if you're talking to aerodynamic experts, I've heard figures quoted that the difference between, say, a 42 centimeter handlebar and a 36 centimeter handlebar at kind of race speeds of 45 kilometers per hour could be around 12 watts, which is, you know, the difference between the new Orbea Orca and the old Orbea Orca was said to be around 15 watts. So you know, you're getting as kind of like a bigger jump in performance as a kind of generation to generation of bike just by swapping your handlebar width potentially. So it's kind of low hanging fruit, but it doesn't mean it's an inconsiderable gain. So I think it's great that Orbea have kept that adjustability.
Now, forgive me, because this is no doubt something you've covered in one of the aforementioned fantastic articles, but is narrower handlebars a one size fits all solution in that unequivocally, no matter who you are, you'll go faster with a narrower handlebar? What if you've got really wide shoulders?
So the people the experts that I have spoken to seem to think that it is pretty much unequivocal. And, you know, we're seeing on the track, for example, Olympic track sprinters are using sub 30 centimeter handlebars now, even if they're, you know, built like rugby players. So I think it's just because it narrows your frontal area. Even if you've got very broad shoulders, bringing your hands in still narrows your frontal area. So the gains, and obviously, you know, the faster you're going, the kind of bigger the kind of pure wattage gains are. But it's a kind of, is as long as it kind of doesn't cause you any fit issues or any handling issues. In my experience, I haven't had any, but I obviously can't vouch for everyone. Then yeah, it's essentially a pretty much a win. So that's personally, I don't use anything wider than 36 centimeters anymore. But you know, for me, that's normal now. Like Stan said, I've spent a little bit of time using 26 centimeter handlebars this year, and I've gone back up to 36 just for a little bit more accessory space on the top of the handlebar. But otherwise, I got on with them perfectly fine. So yeah, I can't definitively say for everyone, and you know, you'd have to do some wind tunnel or velodrome testing to know for sure. But the experts that I've spoken to seem to be pretty convinced that it's pretty much a set gain for most people.
Wow. Okay. I guess there's a conversation for another time, but I'll be interested to hear more about the effects of comfort in terms of vibration dissipation, because obviously there's less length of carbon or aluminium to dissipate any forces there. And leverage, how is it sort of out of the saddle, steep climb?
So for 36 centimeter handlebars, I don't find there's any difference in terms of leverage personally, but with the 26 centimeter handlebars, that is the one area where the leverage is noticeably less comfortable, because you're just climbing with your hands so close together, it just feels a bit more awkward. It's not like a huge issue, and I think one of the things that I said in my kind of deep dive into it was that if you really wanted that efficiency gain, you could also make sure you geared down and then just you can spin up the climbs, and you know, because that's typically more efficient than climbing out of the saddle anyway. But if you're the type of rider who likes to climb out of the saddle, then that might be a consideration. Like for leverage in terms of sprinting and things like that, like as I said, like Olympic and world champion sprinters are using them on the track, so I think the kind of role that leverage plays with road and track bikes is maybe a bit like weight, a little bit overplayed, in the sense that you know, we tend to steer by leaning and steer from the back. You know, the turning circle, the size of the turning circle is kind of changed, but typically you'd run a narrower handlebar with a slightly longer stem. So that, you know, makes up some of the difference, but also you rarely really just, you know, turn the handlebars left to right to make turns. It's not on a mountain bike, you do it much more because, you know, you're making like very sharp turns, maybe at slower speeds, but it's not quite the same. And so generally I found that it just wasn't a problem. Like, you know, you kind of, it feels ridiculous and it looks ridiculous for the first 5 minutes, but then you kind of just kind of get used to it and you ride along as normal. And I said, if I ever have to ride a bike with, you know, 44 centimeter handlebars now, it feels insane, but it's just what you're used to.
Sure. Okay. I think the listeners will have to forgive us here. We've gone off on a bit of a tangent, but hopefully it's all interesting.
Well, if you are interested in that, I'll obviously be sending Sam the link. He can read my, you know, many, many, many words article on kind of, you know, how narrow is too narrow for handlebars. I did a kind of in-depth feature on it where I spoke to a few experts, and we also did a YouTube video on it as well. So if you're kind of interested in that sort of experiment, well worth a look on bikeradar.com or on our YouTube channel. So to kind of wrap up on the Orbea Orca Aero again, like, you know, what do you guys think? I thought it was a pretty great bike. You know, I gave it 4.5 out of 5 stars. You know, what do you guys think of it? Where did I go wrong with my review, or what would you have changed about the bike, do you think?
I mean, obviously I haven't ridden the bike, but firstly, it looks amazing. And then from the sound of your review and, YouTube video, it sounds like it's an amazing bike to ride, and it sounds like it's horribly quick as well. And as someone who likes going horribly quick, it sounds like a very attractive bike. I think one of my thoughts, or something I've come away from reading a review thinking, is like, it seems like this bike, maybe it's just an inevitability with full fat aero bikes like this, but there seems to be a few kind of trade-offs going on with it. I mean, I'm kind of surprised by the 50 mil wheels. I probably want something deeper if I'm going to the lengths of having a full aero frame. And also the thing with the aero water bottle and the lunchbox and the down tube, it's kind of, I am coming away from it wondering who this bike's really for, you know. Is it for racing? Well, it's not UCI legal. Probably can't turn up to, I mean, can you turn up to a time trial with that box? No.
You can turn up to a CTT time trial with that box. And obviously the bike would be UCI legal if you took the box off. I think, you know, like the kind of System 6, it's targeted at road racers who do kind of flat and rolling courses, maybe sprinters, that sort of thing. Like, I think maybe it's an interesting industry point, but I think kind of like you've alluded to there, Stan, like UCI legal race bikes have kind of moved away from this pure aero bike thing towards the more kind of aero and lightweight combined, because that's what the pros want to ride. But I think, you know, I do have a kind of respect for the brands who respect the maths and sort of say this is the faster bike, regardless of what, you know, maybe the World Tour pros believe. So it's an interesting one, because I agree with you, like people still really care about weight, whether they're World Tour pros or amateurs or, you know, just kind of general consumers doing, you know, Saturday runs with their mates. People really, really care about weight, and so it's kind of, yeah, maybe it's a hard sell if it, this is one of the heavier bikes that I've tested recently. And so I do think, you know, as I kind of said in the video, I do think it will be a sticking point for many people.
I agree with you, Simon. I like it. I appreciate its premise and Aubert's commitment to the aero design. I like the bike and things like the Ribble Ultra. They seem dedicated to moving the aero bike genre forward. When, you know, with the rise of the Tarmac SL7, that sort of genre seemed to be on its way towards stagnation, if not obsolescence. But for me personally, it's just too uncompromising. I think something to keep it on brand with Orbea, something like their OMX, Orca OMX, makes more sense for the riding I like to do, where it's well balanced across the board. It just comes down to a head versus heart thing for me. I think I'd like to think I'm relatively clued up on the objective benefits of aerodynamic efficiency and recognize and appreciate its value to performance. But personally, as I'm not a competitive rider, I ride for the enjoyment of riding bikes. A big factor, as you mentioned, is the subjective feeling of a bike, and weight, something that's lightweight, often feels so much more rewarding to me and engaging to ride, despite my average speed potentially being a little bit lower. And it means that influences my opinion to the point that this bike isn't something that I would look to buy. I'm very sorry, Simon. I know that means our friendship now has to come to an end. But
it's fine. I'll forgive you. Don't worry. It's fine. You know, if we ever go riding together, I'll probably just, hopefully this means you're easier to drop, Sam. So
it's not about the bike that makes me easy to drop.
Yeah, I think that head versus heart thing is an interesting thing, because I think that you can like wade into lots of science about what's faster, what saves watts, but a lot of people are gonna love the feel of a fast bike anyway, right? Like I don't race, but I've spent time on aero bikes and I've absolutely loved bombing around as fast as I possibly can. So whether that means I'd actually spend £10,000 on this aero bike is another question, but I definitely understand how it's an attractive proposition.
Yeah, I think that's where I fall on it too. Like I think I really like the feeling of kind of going fast, and so when you get on those pure aero road bikes, they just have that different ability to kind of just sail along a little bit, especially if you get that kind of cross tailwind with deep section wheels, it just feels extraordinary. Whereas like, I suppose it's a really tricky one, because I know like you said, Sam, it's all really subjective. And so when I'm going, like I said, I'm a reasonably light guy, you know, I'm like 65 kilos or so. And so when I'm going uphill, I never really feel heavy, no matter the bike. So it's kind of one of those things where for me, it just, I don't ever feel like the bike is ever the kind of thing holding me back on the hills, rather than just, you know, how hard I can turn the pedals.
Yeah, it's just total opposite for me, Simon. I'm north of 85 kilos, so it's definitely the bike that makes me feel light and good at climbing.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the difficulty of, obviously, when we're reviewing, right? Like, with all of these reviews, when we can get some objective data involved, you know, we will always try to do that. But it's a lot of this stuff is very subjective. But hopefully anyone who's kind of read my review, you know, will read it in the kind of context of the other reviews I've done. And that gives you a picture on, you know, on the kind of the overall where I'm coming from. So, I think we'll leave it there, chaps. So thanks very much for joining me today. It's been an interesting discussion.
It has indeed. Lovely to speak to you both.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks.
Cool. And as always, if you haven't already, don't forget to check out my review of the new Orbea Orca Aero on BikeRadar.com and the video on our YouTube channel. Obviously, if you have any spicy comments, do let me know what you think. I will respond to them. I love to do that. So do let me know what you think. And as always, don't forget to like this podcast, subscribe to it if you would like to. And that's it for now. So until next time, thanks very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you want any more information on what we've been talking about or more news and views on cycling, check out bikeradar.com.